I'm Brex. The universe is intended for audiences 13 and older. Viewer discretion is advised.
Hey everybody, welcome to a V Universe Soundbite, part of the VU Community Podcast, where I, a guy named Raph, a fairly prolific V-user, talk about whatever is on my mind, but this time we take it to another level, where I'm just with a few other V-users, and we're going to follow up and talk about Mass Effect 3. We did a pre-podcast of Mass Effect 3, I know that's a numbered episode, but here, this is basically the same thing, but a continuation. Anyway, this week I have a GPSNS returner, Dave.
Hi, I am Dave, in space, and based on my name, I'm probably the most qualified person to talk about since it is space-related.
Yes, indeed. And also, we have somebody else from the GPSNS side of things, Andrew.
Hello!
He is, what's your name on VU?
Oh, how dare you not remember! Andrew of Teba.
Andrew of Teba, right. I couldn't remember if it was Lightsmong. Yeah.
Oh my God.
We haven't even been in this podcast for 3 minutes and he's already forgetting names. This is going to go on just great.
Well, at least I didn't fuck up my intro again. And we also have Eric.
Hi, I'm Eric, and I'm ET Epic on VU.
And finally, we have Yuvraj.
Wow, yeah, you used my first name. Amazing. Even though most people refer to me as Prince, no, that's fine. If I can throw that out.
Yeah, well, I hope you guys are doing well. If not, fuck it. We're going to keep going. As I mentioned, this is like a follow-up podcast, and thus, it is going to be a spoiler cast. So if you don't want to be spoiled about Mass Effect 3, get the fuck out.
That was mean.
Oh, well.
And there goes about half our viewers.
No, just about like 5% of the viewers, like Kayla. Oh, I'm sorry, Kayla. Anyway.
I still love you, Kayla.
Poor Kayla.
Yeah, she's in the middle of playing Mass Effect 1 at the time of this recording. I know, right?
Well, technically speaking, I only just got into Mass Effect 1 last year when I was actually on a cruise ship, so I caught up.
It's a great way to pass the time because it is a great game, just like all the other Mass Effect games. And as we've mentioned, the Mass Effect 3 trilogy is at an end. You know, aww. Commander Shepard's story is basically over, minus, you know, DLC that'll come up later. DLC will come up later. But overall, in the Mass Effect series, what are you guys' favorite parts? Out of any Mass Effect game, anybody can chime in right now.
There is one mission that I did find in Mass Effect 3 that I thought was absolutely phenomenal, both in the storytelling aspect and in the gameplay aspect, and that is probably the Grissom Academy stage. This is the stage where you get Jack, and you meet up with Jack. And now, the interesting thing is, I didn't actually have Jack as like a romance or a love interest, yet I thought the character development of this Jack was actually really fantastic, and the way you actually see her evolve to become someone who had absolutely no one as absolutely psychopath to having someone who actually cares about other people, and she says that the students are actually because of the thing to have her family. I thought that was really well done. I also liked some of the combat in there, especially one of my favorite scenes is probably where you're in a huge lobby with a couple of Cerberus troops and all the students are throwing down the biotic projections. What do you guys think about this part?
Grissom Academy, yeah. And also...
For me, Grissom Academy was pretty amazing because a lot of people who did not pick up the Mass Effect novels have no idea of its significance, but as it turns out, Kaylee Sanders was the Mass Effect hero before Shepard was, because the first book came out 6 months before the first game. And so I was like, oh, we finally get to see Kaylee Sanders, and we finally get to see Grissom Academy, where they've been teaching these biotic kids. And who would have known that Jack would end up there? It was just pretty cool. The only thing that scared me was I thought that at some point Kaylee might die. And I was like, come on, no, I didn't read all those books. Every book except Deception, because that book was crap, and that's for a whole nother podcast. Second, I was like, okay, she made it. Thank Christ.
Another part I liked about
every level, I was scared someone was gonna die.
I know, right? Like, and throughout Mass Effect 3, the whole theme of the game was sacrifice. So it's like, oh God, is somebody else gonna die?
I was particularly fine. I mean, this moment made me want to just find a closet and cry for couple hours, but Morton's sacrifice.
Oh God.
That was really sad for me because I really like Morton as a person and a character, mm-hmm. and the fact
but you can't make him survive.
What?
You can't make him survive.
Yeah, you can make him survive, but it takes a lot.
But you have to be partially renegade as well.
No, you have to be full renegade, basically.
For Morton to survive Mass Effect 3, you need to, in Mass Effect 1, have Rex die at Vermeier. And in Mass Effect 2, you have to destroy Malin's Cure. Mm-hmm. And that's the only way that Morton can survive Mass Effect 3.
And in Mass Effect 3, you also have to pass a, what is it called? A reputation check along with Morton.
Yeah, you have to convince him that it's not worth going up there because the Cure is destroyed and the Krogan won't be united anyway.
Yeah, because Eve's not going to be alive because Malin's Cure data isn't there, and Reeve is a shitty leader.
I also have to say, of all the performances in the Mass Effect franchise, I reckon the guy who played Morton was probably one of the best performances out of the entire series.
Two people played Morton, actually. In Mass Effect 2 is Michael Beatty, and in Mass Effect 3, I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't know the second guy, but
the guy who played it in 3 was a lot better. I'm just saying that right now.
God. The BSN is going to eat you alive.
let me put it this way. There's the scene, if you choose the renegade options before Morton goes up into the tower, you've got him, you really see his emotion here. Even though he's like demoted to a supporting character or more of a minor character, which I really did not like because I really liked Morton
I'd say he's still a major character, just he's only prevalent in one of the acts.
Which I still think is rather crap, and I still think he probably could have expanded him a lot more because the way they set up his dialogue and the way they had him moving around and the way he actually delivered his dialogue was actually, I think, unique. The fact that he was kind of going over the top, and he was still able to sing as well.
Well, he sang right up on. He sang right up until his death.
He doesn't have to sing going up there, actually. Like, when I got to that, when I was playing that level, and do note that I only beat Mass Effect 3 once. Again, we'll get over that later. when I found out from the Dalatras that I could sabotage this whole thing, and that was the only way to get Salarian support, I was like, shit. So when the Krogan, Rex would say, "Oh, Shepard, you look like there's something on your mind," I kept my mouth shut. And if Eve brought it up, I kept my mouth shut. I just would never say anything to them because I was, freaked out.
Yeah.
But when I got to Morton at the end, right before the tower, I was like, "Morton, stop, hold on." And then I told him what was going on. And Morton's like, "Oh, you made the right decision because you didn't know how the Krogan would react, whatever." And then when he goes up there, he doesn't sing, but he still does what he has to do, and his dialogue's actually really well done. So.
Yeah. Either way, whatever happens up until Morton going up there, or not, depending on your choices, the dialogue's really, really sharp. Especially, if you, choose renegade options, he starts feeling like going out of character because he starts yelling at you, which you don't see out of Morton.
Yeah. That was amazing.
Which is what I just said before.
That was amazing. I saw that on YouTube because I would never get that myself. I would never piss off Morton. But that was so
I made a mistake. That really gave me goosebumps.
That's why I said I reckon the guy who played Morton in the third one was really good.
Yeah. Overall, I think that was Morton's shining moment, that's probably how most of us are going to remember him in 3,
Back to the subject of favorite levels, that Chunker mission was one of my favorite missions in the game.
Yeah,
it was pretty good, for sure.
It was a pretty good mission.
Oh, yeah. I got stepped...
The Krogan mission be the one with the plants.
I know, right? when I was playing that, and you're trying to, get to the tower and set off those little hammers to summon the Threshema, I got stepped on by the Reaper.
Yeah.
It was just like, squish, damn it!
Because I'm awesome.
I thought I was going to be a boss on that and kill all the brutes, but then I just kept dying. I was like, alright, fuck this, I'm running past everybody.
And then squish.
That's what you were supposed to do. You're supposed to run past them.
Right, yeah. And I didn't know that.
Yeah, I figured that out maybe after 2 minutes. I killed the first one, and then two more came out. I was like, Oh, okay, screw this, I'm just going to go turn this on. I don't care if I get any experience or not. Right, those guys are just way too freaking much.
Yeah, like I saw...
Yeah, I don't think my smoking can last that long.
When I saw, like, five brutes, I was like, shit, okay, I'm going to go around and do whatever. And I kept running around.
Imagine that level on Insanity.
I already played it on Insanity.
Oh, God.
Yeah. if you do New Game Plus, something I've noticed with Mass Effect 3, so you keep all your upgrades and all your levels and all everything going into the next thing, and you can upgrade your weapons further, which is really awesome.
Yeah.
So it made so for me, Insanity was actually easier than my hardcore playthrough, which is my first playthrough. Because I had a fully upgraded Grawl Spike Launcher, and that was the only thing I used as a Vanguard. That's it. Nothing else. And I was three-shotting brutes.
Damn.
Yeah, like, I was just like, boom, 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 reload, next. Yeah, this and this doesn't... Banshees? Well, I would charge and accidentally forget to dodge roll.
Banshees.
Yeah, I would forget to dodge roll sometimes before Novaing around Banshees, so they would grab me sometimes. Yeah.
I haven't been as legitimately scared of the enemy until they introduced the Banshees.
Yeah, like the Ardoth Yakshi mission was one of the highlights, yet less talked about missions that people happen to
do. Right, probably because people hated it.
Yeah, well, it's also because it had Samara in it. Samara isn't a really interesting character, let's be honest, right? Yeah. I agree with that.
Actually, no, I think she's very interesting. I actually think they could have elaborated more on her because you had that kind of pseudo-romance with her in Mass Effect 2.
I didn't have that. Yeah, but I didn't.
They didn't really elaborate on that in the third game. It was kind of just like it never happened, which is kind of a bummer.
Still, of all the characters that had interesting backstories, Samara is probably the one that had the least interesting backstory. Well, that's just my opinion, anyways.
Yeah, Andrew, what were you about to say? It looked like you were about to say something.
I was just going to say I didn't know that a banshee could stick her hands through you until she did it on me, and I was like, "What the hell just happened?"
Yeah, I think in Mass Effect 3 multiplayer, I can actually see the banshee. It glitched out, so I was like, "Oh, you have got to be fucking kidding me."
Yeah, like, first time I came across a banshee was in multiplayer as well. So I heard this scary-ass scream, and it was like, or whatever sound they make. I don't even know.
That was a very great impression.
Thank you. My throat hurts now.
My ears hurt.
This is my opportunity of stealing this podcast.
Yeah, but
when I first saw the banshee, the first thing it reminds me of is a flash animation called Left 4 Speed 2, which is a parody of Left 4 Dead 2 when they see the spit.
Oh, yeah, I've seen it too.
Yeah, and then Nick goes, "That is the scariest fucking thing I have ever seen in my entire life."
Yeah, but...
That's how I would describe the banshee.
But they are... Yeah, let's all admit right here, they are fucking terrifying.
Yeah.
Yeah, like...
I haven't been legitimately scared until the banshee appeared. Whoa, what the fuck is this?
Yeah, I know, and, like, they started teleporting toward you, and you're like, "Oh, God, run away!" unless you have somebody who's, like, super tanky, like, say, James with you, who kind of, like, gets grabbed by her usually, and you're like, "Damn it." And what do you guys think about harvesters? They were big, but they weren't that scary, in my opinion.
I thought they were kind of a wasted opportunity, because I thought they'd be, like, really tough, but if you have the Scorpion or and you have some really good squad mates with you, they go down like that.
Oh, I three-shot them just like brutes with the Grawl Spike Launcher.
Making them explode is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, making cool.
Yeah, like, they do hit hard, but you just have to stay behind cover and hit them a couple times, and that's it.
What people probably don't know is Harvesters were originally supposed to be an enemy in Mass Effect 1, but, they ended up cutting them because I guess they just couldn't figure out how to make it work.
Yeah.
But if you go back and you look at, like, Mass Effect 1's art, you can actually see that they designed the Harvester then, and they just never put it into the game. And in Mass Effect 2, I remember initially just shooting the shit out of the Harvesters thinking that it would do anything to them, which it didn't. They just kept dropping their clicks in and flying away. But now I was like, "All right, I finally get to kill you sons of bitches."
And then and then with me it was like, "Oh, hey, Grawl Spike Launcher, explosive rounds, nothing.
By the way, while we're on the subject of weapons, what weapons did you guys use? I'll start with me. I used, by the way, I played a Vanguard, and on the last podcast, you know, it was Raph, me, and Eric, and we were talking about how I was a very gun-heavy Vanguard.
Yeah.
It kind of worked the same. I was able to work it the same way in this game, which was surprising.
Yeah.
But I decided that I'd only ever use two weapons, the Revenant light machine gun and the fucking N7 pistol. I can't remember the name of it.
You didn't use a shotgun as a Vanguard?
I did not. Dude, I don't like the shotguns in Mass Effect 3, only
no,
because they're so fucking heavy. And I'm like,
no,
I don't
know. They are pretty heavy.
I don't want to use just one weapon. I want to have.
And I don't have that much ammo either, which is really annoying.
Oh.
Yeah. So I want to have options. So basically, with the Revenant, I can just spray, and if I need to be accurate, I have the pistol. And that pistol is so good. That's like the only weapon you need.
The N7 pistol?
The N7 pistol is like fully auto.
Well, that only came with the collector's edition. Yeah, the Eagle, great. Yeah, but...
there you go.
Yeah, with the Grawl Spike Launcher, I had it upgraded, so even if it was my only weapon, I still had 200% increased recharge speed, and also its accuracy was almost that of a submachine gun, so I could hit things from far away. And also, when you have the right upgrades, you have about 48 shots in the damn thing, so literally, I never ran out of ammo, and I could 3-shot things from far away, along with being able to charge. So, being a Vanguard wasn't a problem with the Grawl Spike Launcher, because it was like the Vanguard's completely necessary weapon.
I gave the Grawl to Tali. She raped with it.
Yeah, it's an amazing shotgun. Andrew, what class and weapons did you use?
I was a soldier, because that was I originally was Mass Effect 1, so I thought I'd keep it the same.
Okay.
I was a soldier too.
I used the Phasen machine gun, I think that's how you pronounce it.
Yeah,
the yellow,
that's whatever.
Really quick. And the Paladin handgun, the one you have to buy for 50,000 credits or something, or 150,000.
You mean the one kind of like the Carnifex?
The Paladin is the Spectre pistol that costs like a shit ton of money.
Yeah.
I bought that. And I used as my bonus power, armor piercing, Garrus's one, because I love armor piercing arrow ammo, it's brilliant.
Yeah.
Like I said earlier, I also used the soldier because that's who I chose in Mass Effect 1, so I wanted to keep it straightforward from start to finish. I can't remember the name of the assault rifle that I used. Didn't have it fully upgraded. My weaponry of choice was using cryo ammo. Sorry. So what I do is I'd freeze the enemies and then hit them with a concussive shot, and they would shatter everywhere. And whenever that happened, I found that absolutely satisfying. So it was like, freeze up.
Yeah, like one of
I like the onomatopoeia there.
The cryo ammo in 3 was a lot better than 2, but
way better.
Also
especially useful when you're allowed to give it to your teammates. Oh god, that was good, just breeze right through it.
Yeah,
second weapon I used by the Scorpion, as I mentioned before, which is it shoots these little pellets that explode, and anything that explodes from a pistol is freaking awesome. And I use them a lot for Banshees, Harvesters, and Brutes.
All right, Eric, what about you?
Okay, I played the game as a Sentinel. I've appreciated and I've always liked being a Biotic in the Mass Effect series.
Good at everything, master of none.
Eric has to play the hipster classes.
Well, hey, I actually am playing...
sideways right now.
I am playing an engineer playthrough right now, so I'm playing the unpopular class. But anyway, Eric.
I didn't stick to any particular weapon for too long. I was trying to
find
a perfect combination without keeping my weight too high.
Yeah.
So that was something I struggled with considerably, was the weight. But as far as assault rifles, I used the Avenger, the Matok, the Argus, and I think I ended the game with the Falcon, which...
Isn't that the grenade launcher one?
Yeah, that wasn't even really an assault rifle. That was more like a grenade launcher, which I truly enjoyed at the end. That really came in handy.
Yeah.
As far as pistols, I used the Eagle, basically like the N7 weapons.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember buying the Carnifex at some point, and I started using that, and that was really nice.
Yeah.
Shotguns, I didn't really bother with too much, or sniper rifles.
Oh yeah,
I
did use a sniper rifle. I think I used the Mantis, which is like a 3-shot sniper rifle, which was actually pretty. Yeah, it's like 5 3 bursts at once, which was actually pretty useful.
The Incisor
doesn't actually work against the mechs.
Yeah.
This is where Raph is going to call me a moron, but you know, I bought the Black Widow sniper rifle, the Spectre sniper rifle, which is basically an upgrade on the Widow.
It's a semi-auto Widow, right?
Pretty much. It's a little weaker than the Widow is, but, you know, you've got three shots rather than one.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I bought it so I could give it to Ashley and Garrus, and they kick tons of ass with it. Mm-hmm. I equipped both of them with a Revenant and the Black Widow, but which is totally overpowered. But but anyway, when I got the Black Widow, I was like, you know what? I'm going to try using it. So here I am as a Vanguard, freaking with this like semi-automatic sniper rifle, which, by the way, is freaking huge. And I'm instead of charging people or anything, I'm sitting behind cover, popping headshots, thinking, "Man, infiltrators, you bastards! Now I know why you guys play."
I
play as an infiltrator in the multiplayer.
Same thing.
Foreign infiltrator, anyways.
I play as an infiltrator too. Andrew, what about you? Were there any like weapons that you gave to squadmates that you got but didn't use yourself?
Yeah, I agree with you, brother. I gave Ashley the Black Widow or the Widow, one of them, and yeah, she gets headshots with them every time. I gave Garrus that grenade launcher kind of assault rifle that you just mentioned.
Okay.
And that came very handy in the last mission in London because you just
mowed everyone down. Very handy.
I can't think of any weapons I really bought for anybody except for Garrus, which I just used the javelin with him, which is basically a widow.
I can't remember what weapons I gave anyone. The only person I can remember I actually gave a weapon to was Jarvik, which is that beam weapon that I can't remember.
Yeah, the collector, the particle beam thing.
Particle beam. Yeah,
I was about to call it a collector beam.
That particle beam was fucking absolute mint. That thing was awesome.
I hated that thing. My God.
Well, I stopped actually using it, but when I gave it to Jarvik, oh my God, he just blew right through it.
Well, maybe because it's like a weapon he's comfortable with.
Exactly.
Rav, how did you use it, though?
I'm a very, very power-heavy, aggressive Vanguard, so if there are 3 seconds where I'm not charging an enemy, I'm not playing Vanguard.
In other words, with that thing.
Literally, this is how I'd play. I would charge Nova and have time to do one shotgun blast before my charge was already up. That's how quick my cooldowns were. So
Leroy Jenkins.
I did not die because my barrier was always up.
The thing with the particle beam is if you hold it down for long enough, not only is it shooting its beam, but the beam actually gets like super powerful.
Yeah, doesn't it overcharge
itself? It's kind of like an overcharge. And it's pretty awesome because as long as there's any sort of ammo left in it, you can it'll regenerate really quickly. If you run out, then there's like this animation where I guess the weapon got too hot and Shepard has to like keep it away from him for a little while.
Okay.
So as long as you like manage how much you're shooting it, it's one of the best weapons in the game.
I'm playing through as an engineer right now. I'm using the N7 Valkyrie, I think it's called. The assault rifle, the N7 one. That come with the collector edition. That's the only weapon I'm using as an engineer who throws down turrets, decoys, and drones. So literally there's like something on the field all the time that they're shooting at that's not me. and that's how I play engineer. So like there are people being zapped constantly, people set on fire, and then others shooting at a decoy that's not there while my teammates just kind of pick people off. That's the only weapon I'm using. And I got the particle beam recently for that playthrough, so let's think about using it. And don't know how effective it'll be, but with my playstyle, because I'm a very aggressive player.
I think with that weapon, you need to hang back a little bit.
Yeah, I'm a very aggressive player. Even with Infiltrator, you'll see me running around with a sniper rifle. I play the Infiltrator like I do play sniper rifles in Call of Duty, quickscoping people.
Oh, you're a bitch.
Yeah, like literally, I will quickscope and headshot somebody really quickly, reload, and then when the cooldown's finally done, I'll pop invisibility and do it again. And that's literally how I play Infiltrator while running around.
You should have seen how I played the Mass Effect iOS version with those weapons there. Yes, I actually played that.
Infiltrator? Played that. Infiltrator?
Mass Effect Infiltrator?
Yeah.
I have that too.
I have it, but I've barely played it.
Yeah, I've got some short way through. The only reason why I bought it is because it was still a couple of days away before it actually got released in Australia. I was like, must have Mass Effect fixed. Must have Mass Effect 3 fixed. Because it was already out in the US. Everyone was already started posting videos about it. So in order to quell my ambition for it, I went and downloaded it.
Yeah, I actually have Mass Effect Datapad too. It's just kind of chilling on my phone.
Oh, shit. Thank you for reminding me about DataPad, because now I have to fucking accept my my newest things on it.
And the fleets, like your rewards and stuff? Okay.
Yeah. I think it's kind of ridiculous in DataPad how, like, to get, I think it's Galactic Command.
Galactic whatever. Readiness?
Galactic Readiness, yeah.
No, there's like a specific, for this, for DataPad specifically, after you upgrade everything all the way.
Oh yeah,
it gives you more upgrades to pick, like advanced upgrades.
I remember, yeah.
It's like the Galactic Command whatever thing, but it's like 500,000 credits.
Interesting. Andrew, have you come across any, like, eye stuff for a Mass Effect at all?
No, I have no idea, because I don't have an iPhone or anything.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you can hear Prince using it right now, because his phone is probably, like, maxed out, like, with volume.
Well, this guy lives and breathes Mass Effect. What do you expect?
what does it do?
DataPad basically is, it allows you to increase your galactic readiness by sending fleets throughout the galaxy to, do little missions and stuff. It takes a few hours, but, you know, you get...
Long story short, it's a way to raise your galactic readiness without having to actually play the game.
Yeah, and also...
infiltrator as well.
And also an infiltrator, you can get intel to, like, upgrade Shepard, which is nice.
Personally, I really don't think it's worth that much. I think it's like 50 pieces of intel, you get 1%.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really slow in Infiltrator to actually raise anything. You might as well just use DataPad.
Yeah.
And DataPad's free.
Yeah, but the intel, it can be transferred not into just Galactic Readiness, but also, like, Shadow Broker upgrades, like 5% increase to ammo, 5% increase to shields, that sort of thing, which that's what I use it for. So basically on my Insanity playthrough, I had, like, without armor or weapons or anything, I had a 25% increase to shields and another 15% to ammo and another 15% weapon power. So
I did not know that. I'm actually going to go download it right now.
So yeah, it basically made my Insanity playthrough super easy.
I get it.
Yeah, but if you're level 60, it also happens to make Insanity easy, as long as you know how to play your class.
I finished my first playthrough on level 55, I think.
Okay.
That'll be fine. But I'm doing it as my woman, my female shepherd now, who's an infiltrator, and my renegade female.
Yeah. Right now, I am engineering my greatness. In another playthrough.
I had
puns.
I had to stop playing the game.
I hear you. Yeah, I know. Like, after you beat it, it's just kind of like, oh god, I'm so depressed.
And we'll get on that subject. I cannot wait for us to get on that subject.
that's what she said. One last thing I want to ask you guys. Did you guys play... as all Paragon or all Renegade and or something in between, and what were your opinions on each side of the spectrum?
Can I go over like the whole trilogy, because my character kind of I carried from Mass Effect 1.
Oh god, yeah, it'll take forever.
No, it won't take forever. Like, back in Mass Effect 1, my character was like super super Paragon with very little Renegade, but he was basically a character who had a little bit of a Renegade side. In Mass Effect 2. Still mainly Paragon, but had a lot more Renegade going into him. In Mass Effect 3, I was kind of hoping to go 50-50, but I realized after a while, I was like, you know, if you want the best stuff in Mass Effect 3, you mainly have to be Paragon. And
I was either that or full Renegade, but we'll get to
like,
that in a bit.
Screw it, so I just went pretty much as far Paragon as I could go, and it worked out in the end, I guess, if you want to think about it that way.
Well, overall in the game, like, with the exception of the last 10 minutes, but whatever. Who's
mostly played Paragon throughout most of the game. I did have some Renegade moments where I did go for the Renegade trigger from time to time, and I think I'll bring up the Mass Effect 3
shooting Udina
moments in this. Shooting some of the Udina. Mass Effect 3 moments where I feel like going, oh my god, you bloody bastards. Well, first of all, in Mass Effect 2, when the Elusive Man screws you over and sends you into that collector base, I went full-on Renegade there, because that guy really annoyed me. That's one of them anyways. But in Mass Effect 3, first thing I did with Renegade was shoot Udina. I was really wanting to shoot that son of a bitch since Mass Effect 1.
Yeah, I shot him too.
Udina was a bastard. I don't regret it.
Like, every time a Renegade trigger came up, I took it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the other ones I did was after the Geth Destroyer mission, I when talking to the Admiral after he fired...
Admiral Garrel? Yeah.
Yeah, Admiral Garrel. Yeah, I took the Renegade dialogue.
Punch him in the chest.
And then I punched him in the chest.
Yeah,
and I'm like, oh my god, you almost killed us. So, yeah, of course I'm pissed off. You almost killed us. Bam!
It's like, you almost killed us, and you almost killed your people. You're such a bastard.
Actually, I did not Renegade him. After that happened, I was like, nope, I completely understand.
No, I was get the fuck off my ship.
Like, what the fuck?
I was just like, get the fuck off my ship.
The other gun option that I did, was which was not memorable, was when I stabbed Kai Lang.
That was one of the best moments of Mass Effect 3. Cause,
continue.
Oh, did he not take that one, Prince?
No. Well, that's the thing. If you, you get to the Kai Lang part where he's coming up to you with the short blade and he's going to kill you, if you take the option, then you spin around, break the blade with the Omni Blade. You break it with your arm, and then you stab him with the Omni Blade.
Punch your sword with your fist, and it breaks. That's freaking badass.
But if you don't take the Renegade option, Shepard still kills him. I think she's just like...
Yeah.
You dodge it, and then you just kill him like normal. Yeah. So it really doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But,
oh, really? Thanks.
Yeah, either way, you're just like, which that was stupid. For X, you
think,
son of a bitch.
I think there should have been, like, if you don't press the trigger, then he kills you. It should have been...
Or just like...
I was going to say, I panicked when that happened. I was like, I better do this just because...
Well, yeah, I don't...
Yeah. I think people probably were most satisfied about that were people who romance Thane.
Yeah, people who romance Thane, or people who, like, were close to Miranda but didn't get a chance to, like, save her. Because there was a chance, you know, if you guys didn't know, she could die.
Did you lose Miranda?
No, I didn't, but in another place...
No, you were into Miranda, because
you were into... Yvonne Strahovski, I know. But, like, in another playthrough, just to see what would happen, I broke up with Miranda, and she loses the will to live. So even if you do warn her, she still dies. So, like, in that playthrough, I stab Kai Lang, and he and Shepard says, that was for Thane and Miranda, you son of a bitch.
Speaking of romances, who did you guys go as? I went with Tally, personally. I went with Tally in Mass 2, and I stuck with it.
Yeah.
In Mass 1, it was Ashley. In Mass 2, was Tally. And in Mass 3, I went with Tally as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
I stayed loyal to Ashley. I had Ashley from Mass Effect 1. I didn't cheat on her in Mass Effect 2 because I remember hearing, I can't remember where, but somebody said if you cheated on your romance from Mass Effect 1 and Mass Effect 2, that it would have pretty extreme consequences in Mass Effect 3, although
bullshit.
I haven't actually heard that.
Bullshit, yeah.
Bullshit.
Apparently, just kind of a goofy rumor, but
it's not extreme, but there are consequences.
There is a dialogue option in the hospital. Ashley or Cade, and if you chose him, would say, what about us? And you have the option to say, I'm still interested, or it's over. And if you choose the it's over option, nothing happens. Whereas if you choose we're still interested, then that person will mention the love interest you got in Mass Effect 2. You'll get into this huge argument and said, oh, but you left me on Horizon. What was I supposed to do?
Yeah, and meanwhile, they're bleeding in a hospital bed, and you're just like...
Exactly. It's like,
oh, God!
It's worse than that. It's like, there are millions of people dying across the galaxy, and you're having a bitch fight about who's in love with who.
Like, the thing is, like, BioWare, the rumor that you were talking about, Eric, wasn't a rumor. BioWare said several times that if you cheat on your romance option from Mass 1 in Mass 2, that there would be these huge consequences. And they said that they knew how many people were cheating on their romance options because they had the stats and all that stuff. So I was thinking, before Mass Effect 3 came out, you know, oh crap, you know, there's going to be, you know, whatever. And I wanted a romance Tali back in Mass 1. So I was like, well, now the option's here and I've taken it, but I'm going to do my carryover save. Do I romance her or do I stay loyal to Ashley? I didn't know. And I was like, fuck it, I'll take the risk. So I romance Tali. Then I find out what the freaking consequences. If you don't romance Tali or Garrus in Mass 2, then you can't romance them in 3. the only way to carry their romance into 3 is if you romance them in 2.
Yeah, it's if you start it in 2 and then do that. Otherwise, they just hook up with each other.
They don't care. Matter of fact, Ashley told me that, oh, you know, Tali's like my sister, so I'm happy for you too, and that's it. I'm like, really?
Well,
I was expecting a cat fight.
Well, I did see a video on YouTube where she gets really uppity if you choose Miranda.
Oh yeah, she does get uppity if you choose Miranda, because she's like, I'm actually a real girl, I'm not a slut like her. and she's in a hospital bed saying this, and you're like, oh, shit.
Well, a lot of the fans weren't happy how in Mass Effect 2 there was so much focus on Miranda's ass. And so,
there wasn't that much. Come on.
No, hold on. There was a lot of focus on Miranda's ass in 2. Trust me, there was.
I could think of about 3 times where
and
it does, but that's it.
In Mass Effect 3, I was thinking, okay, if Miranda shows up, I'm going to pay attention to see if they have like the camera cuts to her ass again, like they did in 2. Which they did, and I was like, "Oh, come on! They're not even trying."
All right, they had 2 ass shots in it. I counted.
too many.
Nah, not enough. Not enough. It's Yvonne Ostrovsky. She gets her own thing. But Andrew, what were you about to say? Sorry.
Oh, so my chef is very confused with romance in Mass Effect 2. I somehow called Tali, but I didn't really mean to. And then Morden says to me, apparently everyone's thinking you're game with Jack. And I was like, what? I didn't do anything with Jack. And then suddenly I was romancing with Tali, and I was like, okay, fine, go with it. I don't care anymore.
Shepherd must be so confused.
Let me guess, in the third one, romance team. And the third one you're
trying to stick around. Yeah, it's like, I was just being nice to you. I didn't mean to make out with you in the middle of purgatory. I mean, I'm sorry.
Speaking of which, a lot of BioWare social networkers who are listening to this right now said that they were afraid that they were going to get, like, ninja romance by Steve if they were nice to him. Because that's kind of how it worked in Mass Effect 1 with Liara, where you were just trying to be nice to her, but you kind of accidentally got into a romance with her when you didn't mean to.
Well, same thing with Ashley.
So, I would like to say that I really think that the female players who chose Femship really got screwed over with love interest.
No, they did.
With 3, yeah.
They did, because as it turns out, if you made the wrong decisions if you make the right or wrong decisions, depending on whatever you're going for, a female Shepherd may have no heterosexual romance options in Mass Effect 3.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
For that to happen, you had to sacrifice Kaden on Vermeer in the first game, and in Mass Effect 2, you had to either not romance Garrus or have him die.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's the case, then your only like real romance options in the third game are either like fucking
Liara,
Samantha, and that's it.
Yeah.
You can also romance Diana.
Yeah, or Diana, but she's not really interesting.
Yeah, we're not going to talk about Diana because we don't care.
about the whole thing with the female shepherds, I was actually surprised that you weren't actually able to romance James.
Yeah, like James Vega.
Yeah, cover quite a lot.
I'll get into James in a sec because I kind of a bit to rant about his character, but thing is, like, there are clearly times in the Mass Effect 3 where James clearly is interested for Shepard. So obviously, if Femme Shepard wouldn't be interested, then it's obviously the player's choice. But the players obviously don't have that choice. Which I was wondering, why the hell would they have left it out? They really hyped up the James character. It was really
guy. Well, one of the things I noticed, like, in his dialogue when Femme Shep's talking to him, she's like, so, James, you know, you keep flirting with me, but are you really going to follow through with this? Then he starts stuttering and is like, I'm sorry, ma'am. That's kind of how it played out.
Go for it!
You know how video games have, like, subtitles?
Yeah.
Mass Effect 3's subtitle, or Mass Effect 3's whole title, is Mass Effect 3, One Big Missed Opportunity.
there were a lot of missed opportunities there.
Yeah.
However, honestly, I think the game was still amazing. Overall, it wasn't as satisfying of an experience as 2, but it was still an amazing game.
I didn't want to play it again straight away as I did with 2 and 1. I don't know, there wasn't as much replay value, I didn't think. Oh, yeah, no, there are.
Well, there's multiplayer, but yeah, I've been playing the shit out of that, but...
Yeah, I would like to talk a little bit more about James here, because you mentioned Mass Effect 3 missed opportunity. I think that describes James completely with his character, because they, BioWare hyped up this new character with James, with Freddy Prinze Jr. at it, and there's pretty much little to no backstory that's actually interesting with him. Like, you don't get to explore with him, like, on a specific mission. His story... All you really get with him is this scene where you guys end up doing like a sparring and you actually talk at the same time. And yeah. That's about the length of it you get. And then James talks about becoming a Spectre. It's like, oh, yay. Want to tell us how you actually got there and how you've done other things? Most of the time, you've pretty much just been sitting on the Normandy and not doing anything while we were around killing anything. Well, that was my shepherd anyways. I do reckon, though, with James, though, they are going to release a DLC with him, and I think it's going to be related to the anime, which is Paragon Lost, I think it's called.
Well, we don't really know much about DLC at this point.
I can tell you one DLC I want them to release.
We'll get on to that later.
Adjusted ending, we know.
They said the Paragon Lost is going to be released in full, which is going to focus more on James's backstory. We don't see a lot of James's backstory in Mass Effect 3, so I reckon they're going to coincide that DLC release with the anime.
Yeah, I am interested to see what DLC comes out for Mass Effect 3. I'm not so inclined to replay the game as much as I was with 1 and 2, like Andrew said, but like I've been replaying it, I still enjoy it, I'm just am not looking forward to the last 10 minutes of the game. Like right now, the entire game... amazing. And I've always been a person who's been about the journey is more important than the ending when it comes to
absolutely
video games.
Same, yeah.
Every time. And a 10-minute ending is not enough to ruin an entire game for me.
Unless it's like the Matrix and it's like the whole movie is a letdown.
Well, that is the entire journey and the ending. So, yeah, yeah, like the last movie was of the Matrix is basically a letdown, and
exactly like everyone talks about how the Mass Effect 3 the ending was a letdown. Clearly, they have not seen the Matrix because the entire third one was a letdown. That's a letdown.
They were quite similar, though.
But that's the thing. Like, that's what makes the Mass Effect 3 ending, in my opinion, worse. Is that the journey up to that point was so fucking incredible, and in the span of, like, 15 minutes, they fucked it up.
Yeah.
That's great, actually.
Fuck you.
It's just like, the last 15 minutes, oh my goodness. Mass Effect 1, from start to finish, was probably my favorite game ever.
Okay.
And Mass Effect 2 was, you know, not as fun to me, but it was a better game, and it was really solid all throughout. And it left you really wanting more. And you go into Mass Effect 3 thinking, yeah, I'm ready to kick Reaper ass and finally do what I was ready to do since 2007. And then at the end, you get these ABC Deus Ex endings, pick your flavor of, like, pie. And I was like, what? It was stupid. Like, every ending was abysmal. Even the best ending of the game was crap.
I disagree. I actually felt that the endings of Mass Effect 3, regardless of what you chose, but I'll get into that in a sec, I reckon that the way they've actually finished the story, like, yes, Shepard has been through hell and high water. I mean, hell, he's pretty much limping and he's like moving like a slow grandmother at the end because not only because did he get hit by Harbinger and with the Reaper being, but because he's been through so much and it's like, oh, come on, got to get further. And then we get to the actual ending, it's like, Okay, now we kind of aim to this very point. We end up coming across this VI, which actually kind of reminded me of the original VI on Isles. Not the one where you find Virgil, but the other one where Shepard is the only one actually recognizes what they're saying. Yeah. I actually felt like that's what the Star Child is based on. I reckon, it was based off existed well before the Protheans, and it would also make sense if the VI technology actually came from the Citadel, since both Protheans and the current Council actually used them. So, which kind of actually would explain why a lot of people actually say, like, why isn't Shepard arguing against this guy? He probably wasn't arguing against it because you're pretty much arguing with the computer. Like, with recorded responses.
But that's the thing. Mass Effect was a series all about choice, so I feel like they gave us three choices at the end, but when all choices end up 95% the same, it's like, that's
it's
just...
It's more about
the
way that it comes down afterwards, that It's more about how it comes out afterwards that it's completely different. Like yeah, I know you like thinking of, like, it's doing ABC. The way I see it, it's either you commit genocide, you rule the galaxy with an iron fist in a dictatorship, or you do this ethnic cleansing.
Yeah, like
it's the less of the three evils that you really have to decide on.
Yeah.
And as a result, I actually chose the destroy ending at first because it's the one where Shepard actually survives, where you actually see a breath. But I actually went back and changed it, and I actually chose the synthesis ending because I actually thought that actually had a bit more meaning behind it than the other two. I mean, the other two, it's pretty much straightforward, whereas the synthesis, there's actually a lot more potential with that.
Yeah, all right.
Except the ending doesn't really make sense, does it? I mean,
it doesn't make a lot of sense.
There's
and it
plot holes out the ass when it comes to the endings.
Yeah, that's... Hang on a sec. I know Prince and Dave have been going back and forth about the ending. Why don't we hear from both Andrew and Eric? What did you guys think?
Everyone else.
Yeah.
I didn't hate it, but yes, I understand why people did. There are bits that didn't make any sense, like how when you get hit by a laser, where do your squad mates go? Then bam, at the end they're on the Normandy, fine. You get and Anderson gets there after you, but then he's ahead of you. But regardless of that, I thought the bit with Shepard, Anderson, and the Elusive Man was so well done. It was such an intense standoff.
Yeah, the Anderson Elusive Man Shepard. Oh god, that dialogue was amazing.
Should have been more intense, but it wasn't, only because I was like, I've seen this before at the end of Mass Effect 1 with a certain other badass character.
No. I just thought Anderson and the Elusive Man going back and forth was amazing. It paralleled a lot Mass Effect 1, but then again, you're coming full circle at that point. We're not gonna get to the catalyst part, but at that point, everything was starting to go full circle, which I really liked about it. But Andrew, were you about to say other stuff?
David, the voice actor for Captain Anderson, because he didn't really have too much in Mass Effect 2, but in Mass Effect 3, I think he really shined. Captain Anderson.
Keith David, who also voiced the Arbiter in the Halo franchise.
Oh my god.
He was pretty good in this one. He probably wasn't spectacular in this one. Like, I've seen Keith David do better stuff, but at the end, what really stood out with Keith David was his really unique voice.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it didn't really feel... And there were some cases where I felt like he didn't really get into really emotional with a lot of the dialogue throughout the entire series. Like, he's a good actor, but I reckon he could have done better in Mass Effect.
What would have made his dialogue better in Mass Effect 3? Cool. If he went back to his Modern Warfare 2 character, Sergeant Foley.
Ramirez!
Ramirez! Ramirez!
AC-130 with a banana peel. Shepard, take down that Reaper with a throwing knife.
Shepard, take down that Reaper with words! but Eric, what about you? What did you think about the ending? I know you just completed the game a few days ago, or yesterday.
I actually beat it yesterday,
okay.
Finally. I kind of pecked away at it for a couple of weeks, and I know Prince chimed in, and you chimed in. We were kind of back and forth talking, and how Prince was so... He felt so bad for me, because I hadn't finished it yet, or he just...
Yeah, and Prince, you freaking spoiled the ending for him.
I didn't spoil it, but there were a couple of things he revealed, and I was like, oh, okay.
Before I complete it, Prince said to me, Andrew, if you're colorblind, you'll be really confused. I was like, what the hell could that mean?
Hey, I am actually partially colorblind, but I'm not that bad.
I told Andrew, I was like, if you can't tell the difference between red, blue, and green, the ending will make no fucking sense to you.
But anyway, Eric, continue.
Okay, I will agree. Mass Effect 3 was a great game. Like, everything, you know, from when you started up until the last 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not going to say that the endings were 100% completely horrible. Every beginning has an end. Every story has a finish.
Yeah.
Now, you're not necessarily going to be satisfied with, like, if you're reading a book and you just don't like how it ended, well, you're still going to remember the book. I mean,
exactly.
There's still, yeah. I mean, it's everything in between that really matters.
As I said, the journey makes up more than just the ending.
I mean,
but anyway.
It should be a lot about the journey. But that being said, after I finished the game yesterday, I felt as though Mass Effect 3 had become, at that point, unsavory to me, because the endings, I mean, yeah, there was a closure. I remember I picked the blue one, which was Control, I think.
Yeah.
Okay.
So now you're
right. And I just, you know, I put my controller down and I watched it, and I was just like, this is dumb. I mean, this is stupid. I don't think they were sure how to end it. They were going on about, even though you're technically killing quote-unquote synthetics, they will always be rebuilt, and they're going to come back, and they're going to try and take over again. I don't even think it should have been, they shouldn't have even been talking about synthetics in the first place. It's like, we have this giant, massive weapon, you have the key, you have the catalyst, and this and that, and blah, 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 and the Citadel, which I thought was fucking stupid in the first place. Like, they keep rehashing the Citadel. They already did, like, the most important thing they were supposed to do in the first place with the Citadel in Mass Effect 1, and they keep going back to it, which I thought was stupid. I mean, the fact that games constantly rehash already, like, done and over with topics and places and things, that just...
I didn't think the Citadel was that bad of a choice.
Yeah, I didn't think so either. The Citadel is kind of like one of the major staples of the Mass Effect series.
Yeah.
Next to the Mass Relays.
I get that, but the fact that they just keep going back to it and referring to it all the time... Point. I mean, the fact that they built the Crucible, that should have been enough. I mean, that should have been the focus.
So did he want like the Crucible to be more like just a super weapon, or did he want it to be like some other key of sorts? What did you think about the Crucible?
I wanted it to be just the main thing. Like, it shouldn't have had anything to do with the Citadel. Like, oh, the Citadel.
Okay,
the key.
So okay,
it shouldn't have been in
okay.
the first place.
Gotcha.
I'm gonna agree with Eric. Yeah, he's right.
I mean, the fact that they keep rehashing things that have already been done and over with, that to me is a cop-out. This happened in another franchise, God of War. I don't know if you guys played those, but God of War 3, they weren't sure what to do with that game, so they rehashed a lot of things from the other two God of Wars, and instead of like making brand new story and going in the direction it should have went, they rehashed everything. So God of War 3 was not as enjoyable story-wise as it should have been.
Okay, well...
Then you have to remember with a lot of trilogies is that it's... When you've got a really highly hyped trilogy, it is really difficult to find an ending that a lot of people are going to agree on. Now, obviously, I used The Matrix earlier, which I thought was absolutely terrible, but it felt like it needed to be, like, rushed into closure, like they had to do it. And the way they did it, I think, was absolutely terrible because they kind of, like, predicted, like, Zion was going to fall... And it wasn't really that interesting to begin with, and I don't even think they probably any sort of amazing execution would have changed that.
Yeah.
Now I will use another point that I would like to use, which was Lord of the Rings, and I did enjoy the closure for Lord of the Rings trilogy, mainly because there was a freaking whole hour of it.
it could have been like that with Mass Effect because there's so much that was covered.
There's
a problem with it in that Lord of the Rings is more storytelling wise, whereas Mass Effect 3, you kind of have to find an even balance between storytelling and gameplay. And I felt like in the final 15-20 minutes of the game, it was actually more of a storytelling element than it was of a gameplay element.
Yeah.
So I reckon if they kept on going on a little further on after that, I think that people you probably would have watched it and it's like.
Yeah.
I love thing you have to realize is that there's a lot of content in the game that gets cut out and it gets cut out for a reason. Like if you've got the Mass Effect, I think, can't remember what it was called, the After Hours app on the iPad. There's actually a deleted scene on there where during the rush to the conduit, there's actually a scene that was deleted where you actually see your squad mates actually get blasted by the beam, and they actually took that out of the game.
Here's my comments about the ending. I don't think people are pissed about it because it didn't exactly end how they wanted it to.
Exactly.
I, for one, still really love the game, and I'm still playing it. I'm playing the shit out of the multiplayer because I enjoy playing it with friends. I'm playing through it because I enjoy the journey. Overall, it's a brilliant game and improved upon everything from the first two games. However, the end isn't just, oh, they didn't make it how they wanted. That's just abhorrent, you know?
Yeah,
it
I know.
Makes, it makes no exactly. sense. The end itself makes no sense, and it looks like BioWare didn't even try to make a good way to end the series. For some people it makes sense, but that's how I think people feel, you know? I don't want to go into all the details, but to me, to end the controversy is a little bit more involved than not just ending it a certain way. I don't want it to become an ending like, Lord of the Rings, where they go about 30 minutes after, like, you know, it ends. But however, the way Mass Effect 3 ended, this is the best analogy I can think of. Lord of the Rings, same way. Right after, say, Frodo and Sam destroy the ring, imagine if the movie ended right there. How much different would people think about the movie if that happened? That's kind of how I felt about the ending. It felt like it fell flat on its face, and they didn't have much of an epilogue to give us very much closure. Now, yeah, but that could be the DLC. We don't know yet, because that's...
This is what I think they need to do. If they're going to make a DLC to kind of touch on the ending, they need to add to it somehow, add to the ending, and I don't mean just like a Dragon Age Origins epilogue of where all the races, you know, where are they, and how are they doing? I mean, they need to do shit. Like, first off, no matter what ending you pick, the mass relays are destroyed. That, to me,
well, actually, that's not true, actually. In the control one, they actually don't get destroyed. They get damaged, but the main scene where they actually see Shatter apart is actually not shown in the control ending.
So they will destroy them out of what?
There's actually been a couple of forums on the BioWare social network about that. There's been a lot of theory that, because you see it, you see like the blast actually come out of it, as you see from the next scene where you actually see the blast affect the entire galaxy, but you don't actually see the mass relay break apart itself.
Okay.
I did see the mass relay break apart.
In the control?
Yes.
Like it gets damaged, yes. Like it gets blasted, but
destruction of a mass relay is messed up when you compare it to, like, what happens to a mass relay when it gets destroyed, and the fact that the entire galaxy fleet is in the solar system.
Well, there's the difference, and with these the destruction of these mass relays. You know, if you ram an asteroid into it, like in the Arrival DLC, the entire system blows up. But these, it looks like what I can get from the endings, at least. You know, the way the mass relays are destroyed, it doesn't supernova.
They kind of just fall apart.
Yeah.
Like, you see all the dark energy build up within it. I reckon my theory is that, because you know how we see the different colored endings, I reckon there's a lot more to it than that. You'll notice how when they actually hit the mass relay, the element within the relay actually changes. So it's not simply as just... it just changes color and then explodes, and then everything else should have been destroyed. It's not. What it actually is, it's actually changed the wavelength completely. You'll notice that in there's a variation of endings where the Earth might get devastated or might not get devastated. You'll notice when you see the Big Ben explode or not get destroyed. So obviously the wavelength changes depending on how many... I think it's like how much war assets you obtain, so how many more scientists were actually studying it.
Yeah, like, depending on how many scientists were on the Crucible, you know, that could change. That could change how destructive it is.
Here's the thing with BioWare, and I cannot believe that they were fucking advertising it like this. But they're like, "Oh, Mass Effect 3 will have 16 different endings." Bullshit. Their idea of different endings were different permutations on the same one ending. Like, if Big Ben was destroyed or not, that made a completely different ending. Like, no, it didn't.
Everything just got wiped out completely.
If that's the case, then Dragon Age Origins had like 1,000 different endings, which it didn't.
Yeah.
But that was their logic. And I'm like, no, there was like really one ending. And if you want to count the three choices, A, B, or C, then there's three permutations on the same ending.
Yeah.
Those three endings that you pick, supposedly, are pretty much carbon copies of the endings of Deus Ex.
Like, first of all, can I just say thank you so much to everyone who's been saying it related to Deus Ex, because I'm currently playing Deus Ex Human Revolution right now, and everyone keeps on saying it's like, oh, geez, thanks a lot, guys.
yeah, spoiler cast for everything.
Relax. No, it's not the endings of Deus Ex Human Revolution. It's the endings of the very first Deus Ex.
I'm playing that.
Spoiler cast for everybody.
Like 10 years late.
But good joke though. Good joke.
Retake Mass Effect 3.
We'll get to that in just a second. But we got to start wrapping up. But let's touch upon the retake Mass Effect movement. How about that?
Let's end on positivity.
Yeah.
Depending on which side of the fence you're on.
Well, it depends on how you view it and what you think they're doing. Retake Mass Effect, it's kind of, I don't know, it's kind of a weird movement. Yeah, I want the movement to, you know, help out with the ending, but at the same time, it's not, I don't think it's really much, or fans should really have too much say into what,
It's more of a... It aims more like a bullying process than it is an actual advocacy protest. It's like, we want a different ending, but you look, you go everywhere, and like you see on the Facebook, on the Twitter, everyone's saying, most people don't even acknowledge certain topics and just say, oh, it was all ruined, we just want a new ending. With a game, or with a TV show, or a movie, or anything like that, the people who decide the endings is usually an overall mind who thinks up of that. It's not the people who actually read the novel or the story that actually decides on the ending. This is a whole concept of, like, there's a whole debate I've seen on the BioWare social network about art in video games. Now, the way art can be described is by way of storytelling. I like to say by the mention, like, too many chefs spoil the broth, and I feel like it's kind of the same with Mass Effect, although, in a sense, it kind of worked well, obviously, until the ending, but even though I don't agree with it, when you have a whole series of fans throw out whole different suggestions of how all the endings should have ended this way, I look at some of these endings and I say, this isn't interesting at all. It just seems far too predictable. It seems far too unoriginal. And it makes it seem like, why would I even play the game if I knew how the ending was going to end?
Yeah. See, he brings up the artistic integrity argument that's been on the BSN, and not just there, but pretty much everywhere online where people have been talking about this.
Yeah.
If the game was, if BioWare really cared about artistic integrity, I'm sorry, but the picture of Tali in Mass Effect 3 wouldn't have been a fucking Photoshop of a stock image.
I'll give you that there. I'm sorry, but
don't tell me your game is art when you're going to cut corners like that. If the game was art, they wouldn't have gave a crap if it sold a million copies or no copies. They made it as a product to sell. And it has
You can't just dismiss a product, a commercial product, as art just because it's being sold commercially.
I know. That's what I was going to touch on. I was going to say that it does take work to make this product. And, yeah, part of it is artistic. And I'm not just going to say that, that it's not art. I mean, yeah, the whole art and video games thing, it makes sense. But the fact is, you brought up books and movies and TV shows and stuff like that. Because of fan input, those have changed over the years. We've had authors rewrite certain parts of books or entire books entirely, like The Hobbit, because of fan input or because of some other outside influence. Same thing happened with TV shows. I forgot the name of one TV show, but a whole season of a TV show was later made to be thought of as a dream because of fan outcry. And even in video games, when you consider Fallout 3, the ending nobody liked because it didn't make sense, and then they released a Broken Steel DLC to fix it, which basically tells me right there the precedent's already been made. BioWare can't say that, oh, we don't want to do it because then other people are going to... No, it's already been done by Bethesda. And when Broken Steel came out, was anybody complaining? No, people were happy that they fixed it.
Yeah.
And that was a lot simpler to fix.
And then there's...
I have to counter-argument this. I'm absolutely sorry. Just because there are people who actually take in fan input and actually use it within their product doesn't mean it's actually going to be necessarily an amazing product. I will take one example. I can't remember the name of this anime, but it was actually brought up by Kotaku, where there was this one anime developer who completely fan-sourced absolutely everything for his main anime, and it ended up coming with something completely generic. Now, another thing I'd like to bring out, a couple of people probably might not actually know this, but I was actually a writer for a major Machinima series called the DC Chronicles, which was based around Fallout 3. Around episode 5, I was put in charge as being one of the main writers of that, and like we set up this timeline as to exactly how much how the ending was going to go out, how main part of the story was going to go out, and how we would deliver it. Now, throughout the series, it was actually a pretty popular series. The channel had about maybe 15,000 subscribers. It also got pretty popular on Machinima. We got various fan feedback saying. Coming up with all these suggestions, like, why don't you make the character do this, or how about make the character end like this? Thing is, these ideas, they sucked balls. I mean, no disrespect to the fans, I love the fans, the fans were fantastic, but when you've got a preset story and you're going with it, when you start to make it more fan-sourced, you end up losing the integrity of the original story.
Yeah, but when you think about Mass Effect, it's been like since 2007, and people are so now passionate about this series that when they make a sequel, they're not going to take every criticism. They're going to take the ones that they think are best because they know what direction they want their series to go. And
yeah,
so
they've
been given a great chance, BioWare here, to make right the ending that they've done. Because, yeah,
I still don't think that the end. I don't agree with the idea of actually changing the ending so many people don't like us. Because let's just say, I hated the ending of Titanic, but I'm not going to start a petition to start it because obviously it's based on real life events.
Well, here's
make the Titanic sink. No.
Jack was a shitty character. Sure. He shouldn't have frozen to death.
Hey, hold on. No, actually, they did fix that. Jack didn't die at the end of Titanic because if you didn't notice, but the opening scene of Inception,
he's on a beach. He's on a beach. Yeah, I remember. All right.
I didn't think that part was pretty funny. I'll give him
yeah.
that.
Yeah. All right. Here's something I have to say though. It's not so much about the that I want the ending changed. I just want it elaborated on. You know,
yeah,
because there are so many freaking plot holes compared to the rest of the game and the trilogy in itself, and especially that they felt like they condensed it into about 10 minutes or so. Like the Catalyst part, the entire Catalyst part was about 10 minutes long, roughly.
That whole Godfell thing was stupid.
Yeah, it just without any backstory to it and just being introduced into it, or being introduced to it right then, and then you know, it just felt really out of place and out of theme with the rest of the game,
it was a big cop out.
Whether or not you agree, it's a cop out. It's just it left so many questions to be answered.
And you know what? BSNers who are like listening to this right now, they're gonna kill me if I don't bring it up. They're probably killing me already for not bringing it up.
They're probably gonna kill me, even though I have no idea who I am.
Yeah, they don't like you. Your opinion.
Yeah, I know. It's like, oh no, he has an opinion. Oh, it's not against the masses.
But I should bring up the indoctrination theory, where people believe that everything that happened after Harbinger hit Shepard didn't actually happen.
I was actually about to bring that up.
That was indoctrination going on in Shepard's head, because if you pick the Destroy the Reapers ending and you have a effective military strength of 4,000 or more saving Anderson, or 5,000 or more not saving Anderson, then you see a short clip of Shepard taking a breath on the grounds
of London.
Of London.
Yeah.
You know, taking half a breath. Which, by the way, that scene is also a fucking cop-out. But, you know, with that, it makes you wonder, none of the stuff that happened after that beam attack made sense. Like example, Anderson coming up ahead of Shepard when he was supposedly in afterwards.
Well, he did end up in different areas, and the walls did shift in Anderson's area.
Yeah, but the only way up into the Citadel was the beam. We didn't see Anderson there.
Yeah.
He came up
off. And then we consider, you hear on the radio that nobody made it into the beam, fall back, fall back. It's like,
Well, Shepard, they all thought they were dead. Like, and Shepard just got back up.
Shepard and Anderson made it into the beam, and Tim was already in there. It's like, okay, wait, hold on.
Elisabeth got there before the Citadel was taken, because you listen to the Prothean VI beforehand in the Cerberus space, and he already knows exactly what the Catalyst is. So he's gone there well before the Citadel actually gets taken by the Reapers.
And then another thing, and this is very minor, but it jarred me. How the fuck did the Reapers move the Citadel so far?
Well, like, they did build it.
To me, the Citadel was like this big thing that I never thought could actually move extremely far. So when I heard, like, oh, they moved the Citadel into the Sol Relay, I'm like, wait, what?
that kind of confused me.
And here's another thing. It's like, okay.
I didn't build it.
So I'm like, Shepard is trying to get to the Citadel. Okay, cool. Whatever happened, I mean, Ilos, the conduit, I mean, yeah, they said it didn't work anymore. But I'm like, what about that? What happened there? And there's like, it just made no fucking sense.
It just brought up way too many questions that went against what the rest of
And when Shepard's talking to Anderson and the Elusive Man, there's all this black stuff on the side of the screen.
That's indoctrination attempts.
That's the whole thing. It was like,
yeah, and I was thinking, and I saw a video, like, also, like, that kind of made me think about this. Like, Anderson Like, if this is all happening in Shepard's head, Anderson was more along the side of not indoctrinated side of Shepard, fighting against the indoctrinated side, which was the elusive men. And then, as you go along with their debates, you kind of, like, see both sides, and you kind of see it. And then when it goes into the catalyst idea, it shows the elusive man going toward control, and
which
then
is
also
blue option.
Yeah, and then yeah, also yeah. Anderson going toward the red option, which is destroy.
Control one.
Yeah.
You know, as a kid, when you do control, the kid sticks around. You almost see a little smirk on his face. But when you do destroy, the kid disappears straight away, as if you've disobeyed him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did find that rather interesting. The way, but then again, it's also that Shepard won, because the Catalyst is part of the Reapers, because the Reapers originally came from the Citadel. So, okay, so the Reapers are still going to be around.
I thought
so obviously Shepard's going
to
be one.
What?
Well, here's the thing, though. Just because Shepard thinks he can take control of it doesn't mean he's actually going to take control of it forever. I mean, hell, he's going to come back with the Reapers in maybe, like, I don't know, 200 years' time or 50,000 years' time, or how long it's going to take for the next cycle to come around.
I saw a comic kind of doing that based on the control ending, actually. Like, Shepard, like, as an N7 Reaper, he's sitting down in a lounge chair making Harbinger build the mass relays. He's just like, yeah, you should build that. Fuck you. It's kind of amazing. Yeah. But, Prince, what were you about to say?
There should have been more endings. I remember seeing this big, long post on the BSN, and this guy, I can't remember his name, and I'm sorry for forgetting his name, but he made this, like, 8-minute YouTube video, which was really well done, talking about all the plot holes. If you've been, you know, fighting, picking all the Paragon options, trying to be the hero for 5 years, you know, and however many playthroughs you've played the game of, at the end, you deserve a happy ending, because you've worked your fucking ass off to get that happy ending. And then, from the very beginning, if you've been trying to just have a miserable playthrough, making all the worst options, having everyone die, being a dick to everybody, you deserve the Reapers winning, or, you know, a very renegade victory, because that's what you've been working towards. The fact that they force these ABC options on you is bullshit, especially because before the game came out, I believe it was Casey Hudson who said, oh, you know, there's all these options that are going to change the endings or whatever. We would never force an ABC ending on you.
Yeah,
he actually said that. So it's like, okay, you say that, and then you give us exactly what you said you wouldn't give us. What the fuck is that?
I do have to say, though, you did mention, like, players deserve a happy ending. No, I'm sorry, but that goes back to my original argument of saying the ending would be too predictable. Same goes with the Reapers winning ending. That, again, would be too predictable if you were playing as the Renegade.
I think, like, with the Paragon Renegade thing, we really need to start wrapping up, by the way. But,
there's so much more to talk about with so little time.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
But with Paragons, they're always you're always a selfless person. You're always a very heroic person. You're doing things for other people. And what I think is sacrificing yourself is more of a Paragon ending than getting a happy ending. That's what I think. Because you're literally in the game, you're living for other people. You're very idealistic. And then for Renegade, you're a lot more selfish. You do a lot more things for yourself. Even though everything might be burning around you, I think for Renegade, you should be the only one left.
Like calling Hannah stupid jellyfish.
You big stupid jellyfish.
It's just like with me, I felt like the option should have been there. Like, I don't think that these three endings should be removed. I think they should stick around, but I think that they should have added the ending where, you know, it's happily ever after, the Reapers are destroyed, and everybody can, you know, repair
and get
back together.
Yeah,
but you can fucking.
You just want to build a house with Tally on Renok.
Or go on a beach and chill out with your squad and be like, you know, yeah, we did it. We worked our asses off.
Or have the Kurgan make you a cake while the Reapers are destroyed.
We lost Thane, and we lost Morden, and we lost Caden, but we fucking did it, you know.
Yeah.
Hey, we fucking did it, you know?
Or, you know, the ending where it's like, oh my god, we worked so hard and it didn't matter and the Reapers just rape face. Like, I think those two endings where it's like absolute victory and absolute failure should have been there. Not these three fucking mishmash, bittersweet, pick your poison because they all suck endings. Like, it's fucking stupid.
Yeah, but anyway, we gotta end this. So, guys, all right, say, Eric, this, Prince, right. Dave, do not cut them off, go.
Okay, all right, I promise I won't say.
Shut the fuck up, let Eric talk.
I think we can all agree at this point, they're more than likely, it's 90% certain, they're not going to change the endings. They're going to maintain their integrity, quote-unquote, and just stay with what they got. But I think we can all agree that they need to release some sort of DLC that elaborates and offers a bit more closure as to what happened without...
Not necessarily more closure, I'd say. A bit more clarity of what happened, because nobody knows what the hell happened.
Yeah, I want both of those.
Fill
clarity
that
and closure.
Yeah, fill all the loopholes and explain a little bit more, because they left it so open-ended, and it needs a little bit more explaining.
Yeah, exactly.
The open-ended thing deliberately, because they do want to expand the Mass Effect series.
They do, yeah, but...
They have said to keep your save file from Mass Effect 3, which is quite interesting.
Yeah,
only said that so they could sell DLC, I'm not going to lie.
That's one thing they had to do. Maybe in part to EA, but... Andrew, do you have another 2 cents to put in before we cut this off? That's what she said.
Oh my god, fuck, who the fuck are you talking to? Who would say that to you? Oh.
I have no idea.
She would cut off your... Oh.
Cut off the ending? Okay. Andrew, go ahead.
I agree with Eric. They need to explain what happens to everyone. They need to say what actually happened to Shepard and what happened to her and everything. Yeah, they just need to make it clear and need to expand on it. But yeah, if they do that, hopefully everyone will be happy.
Yeah.
What about actually changing the endings? Would you guys actually agree with that?
No.
I don't think they need to change it. I think they need to add more.
Yeah, they need to add on to it, but I don't think they should change it entirely.
They're not going to change the endings. It's going to be a matter of are they going to answer the big questions?
Are they going to release purple endings?
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to add endings. I don't think they're going to change the endings. It's just going to be a matter of, okay, finish the story. Like, tell us what happened. Without making it drag on and on and on and on and on. Just fill in the blanks for us.
Yeah. And on that note, guys, thank you for joining me on this soundbite of the universe.
I didn't even get to my rant of retake Mass Effect 3 with the Child's Play, but I think I'll leave that for another time.
Oh, yeah. Child's Play, that whole thing, yeah, that's whatever. We won't get into that at all.
If all else fails...
It was evil! Evil!
If all else fails with that, they at least raised $80,000 for charity, even though the reasons might have been a little murky. Anyway, guys, thank you for joining me on this soundbite of the universe. This was an interesting
debate. I enjoyed that. I enjoyed that. Thanks for the debate, Andrew.
Yeah.
And Prince. And Ralph.
And Eric.
And Eric, after forgetting everyone's name, sorry.
I enjoyed having this talk with you. And I will see you guys out there, BSNers, listeners, whoever's listening to this. Good night, good morning, whatever. I'll see you later.
Bye, guys!
My kind transcends your very understanding. We are each a nation, independent, free of all weakness. You cannot even grasp the nature of our existence. We have no beginning. We have no end. We are infinite. Millions of years after your civilization has been eradicated and forgotten, we will endure. We are Legion. The time of our return is coming. Our numbers will darken the sky of every world. You cannot escape your doom. We impose order on the chaos of organic evolution. You exist because we allow it, and you will end because we demand it. Your words are as empty as your future. I am the vanguard of your destruction. This exchange is over.
In 3, people will be really mean to Steve. And there's my phone, which happens to happen every time I'm in a podcast. The phone always has to ring when I'm in a podcast. It's like
it feels off.
It feels like
it's a house phone.
Who uses a house phone? I mean, seriously, who uses a house phone these days?
Hey, I use a house phone too.
Whoa. Let me put this way: the only people who use
a hand,
that's the only.
people use house phones, so I turned it off.
Yeah.
I disconnect. I was like, screw you guys. Stop wasting my time.
But anyway.
Transition!
The journey up to that point was so fucking incredible, and in the span of like 15 minutes, they fucked it up.
Yeah.
That's great, actually.
Huh.
I don't think they were entirely.
Oh my god.
God damn it!
Yeah, what perfect timing.
I know, right?
It's like the phone realizes the ending sucks, and it
yeah,
wants
just
to
when I had
throw its piece
say,
in there.
The phone's like, fuck you.
Yeah.
You know, hold up, Raph. In the description for this podcast, you have to put Prince's house phone as one of the people in the podcast.
I might, actually. But anyway, you were about to say something?